everybody. This is Craig D. Lindsay, a.k.a. Uncle Crizzle, a.k.a. Black Larry David, a.k.a. Cranky Charlie Rose, a.k.a. Anastasia Beaverhausen, Sticky Roberts, former adult film star, and welcome to another Ghetto Fabulous edition of Motherfuckers I Know, the podcast where I talk to motherfuckers I know, because sometimes I need to remind motherfuckers that I know them.
Woo-hoo!
And for today's episode, I have a lovely young lady who I used to know back in the day, back in Houston. I believe the first time I ever saw her, she was would you be correct in saying fly girl dancing?
That's exactly what I was doing.
Fly girl dancing, and then it kind of graduated on to vocalizing and singing, and now she's in I believe in LA doing a lot of fun stuff, which I hope to be in LA at some point in time, but you know it's gonna
come
just,
visit.
I'll be down there at some point. You, me, and Brandy Garcia can just hang. Karina,
well, you know, I have to take a moment to really thank you for your support, because you have been like one of the first supporters that Karina Nistal has had in Karina Nistal company, you know, like Rebel Crew and Sister Stroke. And I'm just really, really grateful for that. I was thinking about that this morning. I was thinking Craig Lindsay has been like, he's been down since day one. So I have to give you props for that and show you love on that.
Well, thank you. And of course, as you just heard, it's Karina Nistal. Karina Nistal, welcome to the Crizzlecast, Cam.
Sorry for introducing myself.
I have a feeling you're in LA, so it's all about self-promotion. So you just gotta let people know, hey, I'm Karina Nistal, I'm here, I'm available for shit. So you always gotta let people know who you are. I understand that.
Sorry.
It's cool. It's cool. This like, hey, it's Karina Nistal, and I'm talking to her here via Skype and all that fun stuff. And, I've forgotten the last time we saw each other. I mean, chances are you're probably saying. I think I interviewed you because I think it was 2007. Did you get through winning a Houston Press Music Award?
That's right. Yeah, that is the last time. Wow.
Because I remember because I was there that week, and it was Houston Press Music Awards week, and of course they had a big showcase, and then they had the big award show banquet or whatever the hell you want to call it, ceremony, and I told my editor, hey, you want me to talk to a couple people, you know, about after the wins, because you know and everything, so. They say, yeah, and since I already knew you and everything, I just thought I'd get a few afterthoughts from you after winning the award and all that.
That was fun. That was a long time ago, dude.
Yeah, it was. I was going to ask, like, what do you remember from that night?
Oh, my goodness. I remember being in shock, and I remember Paul Wall winning the, you know, hip hop award. I got the underground hip hop award. And so I remember him shaking my hand and just being like, you know, get it girl or something, you know, and us taking pictures. And it was a really cool moment. That's my first award. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was just really blessed and grateful that Houston boosted me like that.
Yeah. But you said it's underground hip hop. And everything, and just, and maybe I'm wrong, but maybe I have a different perception of you, but I consider you something more of a vocalist. I know maybe you may have bust a freestyle here and there.
You're right.
But it's just interesting that they had you for the Underground Hip Hop Award and everything.
Right. The following year, I got the Best Latin Contemporary Award. So, you know, I've never been one to like to be pigeonholed in a specific genre, but that album was definitely a Latin hip hop album. Whether I'm a vocalist or not, I definitely consider myself a vocalist first, as you would. So you're right.
Yeah. And well, let's take it back to when the first time I saw you, because like I mentioned earlier, you were Fly Girl dancing. I believe you Fly Girl dancing with Sarah Fern.
Yes.
Diva Karina and Sarah.
Yes. You gave us our first write-up.
Yeah, that was lovely. Yeah, it was a lovely experience because you were. It was the Starlight Lounge. That's what they called it.
Right.
That's what the Rebel. They had this monthly thing called Starlight Lounge, which I often enjoyed mainly because y'all would find old record covers of half naked chicks and put them on your flyers. Yeah, it was the Rebel Crew. It was you. It was Joe B. It was Soul Free. It was
It was definitely a Rebel Crew. It was a full on Rebel Crew experience. It was the Starlight parties and we had Starlight Mints and it was cool having you. I remember you used to come out and support us at Club Wax and good days.
Yeah, just be that guy wandering around, just not trying to look creepy and everything.
You were never creepy.
Well, if you remember, of course, I was the nightlife correspondent.
I know.
For the Houston Press. And it took me a long time before I realized, hey, maybe other people should come with me at night so I don't look weird. Like, I did it for, like, what, 3-4 years, and it didn't occur to me that because it wasn't until after they kind of ousted me from that position at the Houston Press. I don't know what you heard, but I didn't leave on my own volition. But then, like, they started hiring writers to do the Nightfly, and I don't know what's the relationship been with all the other Nightfly since then, but I read of many of them, and the pieces often began with, so me and a friend of mine went out to this place one night.
And you know what? To me, you're the best.
Oh, thank you. Not Brian McManus? Because he was fun. Oh, okay.
I mean, who's that? Ooh, no, just kidding.
He was the guy. He was the next Nightfly, and he seemed to have gone on to have a better career.
Aww.
The music editor of the Village Voice and everything. So yeah, so he apparently, I set the groundwork. I am the Steve
exactly.
Allen.
Exactly. That's what I was gonna tell you. You laid the groundwork for everybody. You're the original, baby. You know, like you can't fade the original.
Thanks. It's just. It was fun writing that column, but living it, walking out, trying to mingle among the shiny shirt wearing motherfuckers and the Guidos and the drunk white women hanging on to their boyfriends for dear life. It was just like an interesting, it was an adventure every week. But the great thing about it was that I got to know a lot of people in that scene, and of course you being one of them. And a lot of people in the Rebel Crew and all that. And just trying to get to how you started doing that, basically. Because you grew up in Spring, Texas, right?
I grew up in, it's close to Spring. I'd say like 1960 area. So it's still considered Houston, but it's Klein.
Klein. Okay.
Yes.
All right. And what was the family like down there in Klein? What was the upbringing for you?
It was suburbia. Yeah. So it was pretty chill. There weren't a lot of minorities.
Mm-hmm.
So that was fun. Cause I had to come into my own. And then as I started getting into like the latter part of junior high and high school, that's when, it started kind of diversifying itself from, just being like a white suburbanite kind of colony to, everything, you know, Hispanics, Indians, Asians, you know, and that was really, really awesome.
And then what kind of family you had? What are we talking about here in the household?
Let's see. Well, my father's Cuban from Guantanamo, and my mother is Mexican from Mexico City. So it was different, you know. I had an older sister. She was into rock. My brother was into hip hop, and my folks listened to, like, you know, salsa, mariachi. So, like, there was so many different music genres in the household. And, you know, we were pretty sheltered. We were brought up really strict. So that's probably why I joined Rebel Crew, because I lost it. But it was fun.
Wait, what'd you lose exactly?
No, I didn't lose anything. I was just kidding.
I thought we were getting into some deep shit here.
No.
Really?
No, I mean, I rebelled. Like, I started to want to go out and get into my own and party and meet people and socialize and, you know, just come into my own, because I knew I was an artist. And being an artist in my household was not completely accepted, because both of my parents were like, first-generation immigrants. Uh-huh. So they felt like, hey, we worked so hard to get here so that you could have an education and go to college and make something of yourself, and, you know, and you want to go be an artist. Oh, you know, so it was like, for a couple of years, it was just like trying to get them to understand that this was a way of life for me.
Yeah. It's fascinating to hear you say that, because not too long ago, I had another young lady on my podcast, Monica Castillo, and she grew up in Florida, and she had parents who are some of that same, because she's a film critic and a film writer, and of course they want her more to be in the vein of like a doctor, and she did eventually study medicine in college, but she said, hey, I want to be more of a film critic and a writer, and it's still more of a sore subject,
right,
for them. I mean, is it you know, even though you have gone on to be a very accomplished singer and a recording artist, it is still, I mean, how's it the family taking that?
They take it a lot better. In the course of my last couple of years while living in Houston, they were coming out to support my shows, which was kind of funny and awkward, because my parents are divorced and my dad's remarried, and so everybody would kind of, I know, it was funny, like my, you know, my stepmom and my mom were hanging out. My dad's just like, you know. but that was cool, because they'd come out to iFest, they'd come out to the Chevy Over Freedom Texas Festival, and it was just so cool to have them there, and they peeped it out, and they were like, wow, she's for real, and they'd tell me, like, with every show, the band sounds better. You know, even if we did little shows in Bohemios, they'd show up and they were always supporting. And that just meant a lot to me. Now that I'm in LA, they're kind of like, we miss you. When are you coming home? And I'm like, well, you have to understand, like, this is me. I'm still pursuing my dream. And this is a sacrifice to be away from you guys. But, you know, I feel like I was called to be here. So that's why I left home. It's hard to be away from your foundation. It really is. I'm sure you feel the same way, you know, being where you are. You need to change the scenery, but at the same time, you're like, you can get homesick. I don't know. Do you feel that way?
Oh, man, this is a sore subject.
I can tell
you haven't listened to a certain podcast where I just basically explain how half my family, most of my family is either dead or I can't find them. I'm basically a nomad out there in this world. And so
I do, you know what, I do remember that. I do remember a few points of that, and from a few of our last conversations or emails that we've exchanged, I've kept you in prayer. So I hope you're not entirely alone, and I hope you know that there are people out there that care about Craig's well-being, and we still love you.
Oh yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. Of course, the drinking and the porn helps. But,
hey, whatever gets you through it, you know.
Thank you for laughing at that, because if I said that to some women here, they just, like, they accuse me they would move away and just like, oh, he looks rapisty. But, but it was, what I was going to ask you about, but I wanted to know, because you just mentioned that your parents were divorced. I know when exactly, I mean, when were they divorced, and was the, did you think that, the rebelling that you had, I don't know exactly at what age did the rebellion happen, or did it, you feel it all, that kind of like, kind of jived together, basically?
Yeah, you know, it was all relatively the same, or somewhat around the same time. They split up when I was 10. So I was still a kid, you know, and I did most of my rebelling towards around 18, 19, 20. So, you know, again, it was just about coming into my own and exploring who I wanted to be. And you know, it has its bouts, like everything, but I'm not doing too bad. I feel like, you know, I'm cool with where I am, and I thank God every day.
I mean, because you say, you know, the father and the mother, so I'm guessing they were, that, I don't know, when you were 10, I don't know what was the situation like. Did you live with the mom? Did you live with the dad? I mean, how was that relationship throughout your teen years? Did he get you on the weekends, or did you just show up at his house? I was trying to figure out just how was it.
Okay. I had an interesting preteen and teenage, or youth years, I should say. I worked for my dad from when I was 11 years old to when I was 20 in our family business every Saturday from 9 to 7 p.m. And my dad's a jeweler. So I didn't have like a 15. I didn't go party like a lot of, people my age do. And so, you know, I felt like I was really sheltered. So yeah, he had me on the weekends, but it was just like to try to instill responsibility in me and the importance of making a living. But don't get me wrong. My dad was definitely there. And you know, I think, you know, aside from being human, my parents did their best, and I'm grateful to them for everything. But I lived with my mom, and she was very nurturing and caring and loving. And my dad's, you know, been present, but he's always been a better provider than anything.
Well, your work is since you were 11, you know, that could be kind of seen as child labor. That's legal exactly. But
I would love for you to tell my pops that.
But like, how, what were you doing?
I was selling gold and silver. Like, I was a salesperson. I was a secretary. I was answering phones. I was taking orders. I was taking like their repairs. Like if they needed their ring sized, or if they needed something melted down into something else, or, you know, whatever it was. But yeah, I was assisting customers and you know, in the showroom all day, just showing them what we had and placing orders if we didn't have it. And so, yeah, I learned a lot about retail working for my pops at his jewelry store. And one thing I learned about retail is I don't like it. If I don't ever do retail again, I'm okay with that.
It is amazing, because you basically did this during your teen years, and I'm trying to imagine you at 13 showing people around. you had this spiel and everything.
Yeah.
What you had to say. I'm just like, and I'm guessing because you did it at such a young age is why you don't like it, but it's just like, it's interesting that you already accumulate this business sense, this business savvy, if you will.
Right.
At such
right.
a young age.
Yeah, and that's what I'm grateful for, is that, you know, you learn people's likes and interests. And you learn in customer service, you learn that that you are providing a service, and that you want the buyer to be happy. You know, you want a satisfied customer to leave your store so they can come back. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, it's a very useful tool to learn. So I'm grateful for that. But yeah, I definitely am not into retail. You know, and I do, however, know the importance of just customer service in general.
Yeah. You say he left at 20. What stopped you? You just tell your dad, listen, I can't do this shit anymore.
Oh, man. If you want to hear some drama, are you ready for this?
Oh, yes. This is what I live for.
Okay, so basically, my family was struck with, like, you know, one of the worst experiences that we could have ever faced. At 19, my dad was opening the store, you know, when I was 19, my dad, you know, showed up to open the store one morning, and there were some robbers outside the store, three people, and they opened fire on my dad and they shot him.
Oh, man.
Yeah, they shot him four times. It was a big story. It made the news, and, you know, jeweler in the Southeast End, you know, shot and, you know, left for dead, whatever. So my dad got taken to Bentaub, and, you know, they have the best trauma center. And these were explosive bullets, so they tore nerve and muscle, and it was just a very traumatic experience for my family. And my dad went through probably about, I mean, till up to date, he's had 50-something surgeries, just repairing, you know, everything he went through, and just everything he went through is just amazing. I can't believe how great medical, like, technology is, and just, I mean, how much he survived. He's my hero. Like, I love my pops. I think he's, you know, if I thought he was strong before, he's definitely, you know, amazingly strong after that experience. But to make a long story short, you know, they did catch the shooters and stuff, and yeah, they were caught 10 minutes afterwards and jailed. And because they were from El Salvador and Honduras, they were actually sent back to their countries. So they didn't have, you know, documents to be here anyway. So instead of, like, doing jail time in the States, they did jail time in their country. But so what happened was, we were working a lot, me and my stepmom, and, you know, I was coming to age, 19, 20 years old, and, you know, discovering my freedom and stuff. And, my stepmom and I had it out really bad. And, I hate to put her on blast, but, she actually gave my dad an ultimatum, because her and I had it out so badly. And she was like, well, it's either me or your daughter. And so my dad chose her because he was just in such a bad position. He was still in a wheelchair. He was still going through a lot of therapy. He had, like, you know, iron pins going through his legs. And so he was just like, he chose his wife, which I understand, you know. And so my pops and I didn't talk for a year. And so I was kind of, like you say, you were removed from the nightlife, you know, writing about nightlife, I was removed from the family business. And so I kind of went off and did my thing. And then finally a year later, my stepmom called, or I talked to my dad. I can't remember how we ended up, you know, resolving stuff, but we did. And now everything's cool. Like, we've all forgiven each other and it's all good, but it was really bad.
But what were you having it out about? Just like, just how everything should be handled in the business?
Yes. How everything should be handled. What I was doing, you know, which I wasn't doing anything wrong, but, like, you know, just regular, pre-adolescent stuff, like getting to work late. You know, I was tired. I was worn down. And I dropped out of college. I was recertifying for my black belt, because I have a black belt in Taekwondo and Aikido. So I was, like, recertifying for my black belt and teaching kids, you know, the martial art to be able to recertify. And so I had dropped all kinds of, like, my priorities in my life to be there for my family and our business. And they didn't like the way that I was handling myself, I guess. And so we had it out. Like, and she, you know, she put her finger in my face, and I was just like, yo, don't do that. You ain't my mama. Yeah. So, you know, it was kind of ugly. Yeah. We said a lot of hurtful things and I was removed. It sucked. You know, it was like, I had to deal with like the emotional, burden at the time of just like, my daddy chose that B over me. Like, what the hell, you know? But it boiled down to like, that's his spouse and, you know, blood's thicker than water. So eventually things were going to align the way they needed to. We just needed time to let, you know, the smoke clear, the dust clear or whatever.
Well, where's the mama during all this?
My mom?
Yeah.
My mom was, you know, in prayer. She was just like, you know, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. And just like, you know, she says, you'll always have me. I'm always going to support you, be here for you. And you did your sacrificing. So, just wait and see what happens. And that's exactly what I did. I got a job. I went from working at a jewelry store, get this, to working at a car wash.
Car wash. Where's the car wash at?
Bubbles Car Wash on 1960.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So I worked as a cashier at a car wash. So that was interesting. And that's when, Groove Matters, you know, Sister Stroke and Annette Music and I were doing our thing at the raves. So that was fun. That was a fun time. It was just, it was a growing up period and finding my own.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would assume it's just like it was just such a tumultuous time, of course, being that your father was shot four times and everything and just had to go through all this stuff. I think it was more just, would you say looking back, it was more about just how it's almost like you're trying to see about coping with this, but you didn't exactly know how. And I think it could be the same thing with your stepmother that was just like, didn't have an idea of what you need to do because you never knew this was good, never thought this was going to happen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, after all it's been said and done, and now it's been, oof. That was 99, so what, 15 years or something? Now I can look back and I can say that the stress really got to us and we were just taking it out on each other because we were frustrated and, you know, our dad, or my dad, her husband, was not fully functional. And so we were just kind of like trying to make sure that, that the business was able to thrive and that my dad survived. And, you know, it was a scary time. Like, we almost lost him. So, you know, at hindsight, I can look back and be like, I had some maturing to do. I was an unruly, you know, teenager going into adulthood and stuff. But at the time I was sticking to my guns and I was just like, no, absolutely not. I will not be moved. So that's what it was.
Well, moving on to, you mentioned, Sister Stroke and Annette Music, who did form Groove Matters. I believe like the first time I was trying, I think I met them in 2000 when we were all trying to figure out what the Nightlife Con was supposed to be about. And I think I did this thing. They had this thing that they were doing, this residency where they were playing music and passing out lollipops and flavored condoms.
What?
I think it was them. I remember that was the first one of the first things, because that's how I first got to know them. And so I don't know if you were involved with that afterwards, but
I don't remember the flavored condoms and lollipops, but we used to pass out stickers, like Groove Matter stickers. maybe that was another rave crew, Craig. I mean,
that's the first time I know about Annette. I don't know where Annette is anymore, but,
she's in Oakland. She's, she goes under Debbie Genuine now. So she's got her own solo career going, which I'm really proud of her and I support her on.
Yeah. And Sister Stroke, AKA, October, Davila. She's in London, right?
She's in London. She has two awesome house music shows on chicagohousefm.co.uk, Wednesdays and Fridays. And her shows are so kick-ass. Oop, I don't know if I can cut, sorry.
The show's called Motherfuckers I Know.
Motherfuckers I Know! Yeah, that's right. So I can get real, real rigid with it now. Anyways, yeah. So, yeah, she's got two really kick-ass shows. You gotta check them out. I mean, they really are, they set the tone for my Wednesdays and my Fridays. And she's just doing really great. We're actually working on, we're talking about Groove Matters project in 2014. So fingers crossed. I'm going to make sure that you're one of the people who gets it first for being one of our first supporters.
Oh, and,
nice. Yeah. I'm excited about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know they later, you know, led me on the path of trying to know more about the nightlife because they were female DJs. Well, I mean, Stroke was more of a DJ and, I believe Ned was more of a DJ and percussionist. And, yeah. they were doing a lot of things and kind of introduced me to all things that were going on. And of course it led me on to a lot of other people, and leading, of course, the Rebel Crew and Joe B and Soul Free and everything, and of course it went on to you. So just how did that whole transition happen? I mean, yeah, you say it was like 99 2000 where you became part of that whole scene, and just what were your early memories of what was happening then?
Oh my goodness, I knew what I wanted to do. Well, you know, my purpose was to use my God-given talents to sing and perform and dance and whatever. And so I started to seek out, a crew or a mentor, producers, just people that would support me on my goals. And, I met a few people that directed me to Rebel Crew. And, I met Rebel Crew, obviously, before Groove Matters, because the Groove Matters girls were a part of Rebel Crew. And so, I met Joe B and started working with him. And it was such an exciting time because I felt like I found my tribe. You know, it was one of those things where I was just like, man, all these guys are badass. They are all like really devoted to their art, from producing to poetry to emceeing to graffiti to, I mean, whatever, DJing. And I was just so blown away by how involved they were in the culture and in the underground music scene in Houston. And I wanted to be a part of it. And I realized too that I had some molding to do, and they took me under their wing and helped me, you know, propelled me to be the artist I am today. So I'm really super grateful for Rebel Crew. Props, you know, to Rebel Crew for we still work together. We still do stuff. Joe B just did a remix on my single Rumors, and it's their family. It's a lifelong connection now.
Yeah, I mean, how did it start out with you fly girl dancing, you being one of the resident fly girls?
I was at the Wax every Friday dancing for Joe B's set, because Joe B has a really awesome, eclectic style of DJing. Like, till this day, he has to be one of my favorites, if not my favorite DJ. He does, like, a Latin, like, breakbeat, raga funk, electro, boogie kind of style. And it's so sick. It's so sick the way he fuses his beats and his seamless mixes and stuff. So I was there every Friday night at the Wax, much like you, you know, and I was like in the cypher dancing with the B-boys and just like doing my thing. And he was like, yo, you can kind of dance. And I was like, yeah, duh, you know. And so he was like, I got this thing I'm working on, this night that I want to do called, the Starlight Events, the Starlight Parties. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, and I want to get two fly girls to be dancing. And, I got you in mind. You think you're down for that? And I'm like, absolutely. Like, you know, I love to dance, you know, and he's like, yeah, I figured that, you know, just, I wanted to see if you'd be ready to get on a podium and stuff. And I was like, well, as long as you don't have me wearing, like, you know, pasties, we're good.
Yeah.
So he was like, yeah, 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 it'll be tasteful and, you know, we'll work it out. And so, we were going to, at that time, the rave parties were huge in Houston. Like, it was awesome. There was the Orbit Room and there was the Hangar and Scooby-Doo Crew was, they've been doing their thing. Props to them too. And so like, we were going to different raves looking for who my partner would be. And, this particular rave we went to was at the Hangar. Which is like just, you know, southeast, like just like 5 or 10 minutes south of downtown. And we saw this girl who was like a genie. Like she just popped into the circle and she started doing all these popping moves and like just, she was wicked, like fluid popping moves, you know, and had this thing going. Like she had her own style and her own vibe. And it was Sarah. And yeah. We were like, ah, that's her. Like, that's it, you know, like instantly Joe and I looked at each other and it was just like, yes, that's her, you know? And so, we talked to Sarah and she's just such a sweetheart. She was down and the rest is history.
Yes. It was an interesting setup. How, if I remember, you know, I guess Joe B would, be in the center, spinning and doing all his things. And you and Sarah would stand on platforms. I wouldn't say, no, it wasn't scantily clad, but, it was snugly fit, which y'all often wore, and y'all would just, y'all would just dance the night away. And it was an interesting thing, cause, I usually associate what you did back then with, go-go dancing, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
I would say it was PG rated, go-go dancing. Y'all were go-go dancers with self-respect. And it's funny because, like, I didn't see a lot of that.
Right.
Then, when y'all started doing it, then I started seeing other people. Like, I don't know if you ever remember or heard of, you know, the Butterfly Divas. There's literally this crew of dancers, this woman, like Yvette Perez. She assembled a crew of dancers and they would perform like at the Gatsby and at different clubs and whatever. And they would go dance and everything. But, it was just an interesting thing, going to this party, this DJ, event, and yet they had their own go-go dancers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we were definitely, if not the, some of the first, if not the first, you know, that did our thing, you know, as far as, you know, I like to say, you know, hip hop fly girling. And I'm like, you know, I'm blown away by just contributing to that scene and being a part of the Wax and being a part of Starlight and Rebel Crew and just doing it. You know, it was such a fun time. So yeah, it was really cool. And I'm so glad you were there. I'm so glad you were there to experience it with us.
Well, I was glad to be there to experience it and just experiencing stuff. Cause yeah, I was young. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. Just like, hey, should I be looking at this woman for this amount of time?
We turned you out, Craig. I think we turned you out. Just kidding.
Oh yeah, yeah, you basically just, I there's no denying that. Okay?
Woo!
But moving, when it go from dancing to singing?
Right around that time. I mean, I think I was juggling everything pretty much the same. But my passion was definitely for singing. And, I knew I would not be dancing forever. Nowadays, I just like to boogie. But I loved singing always. I've been singing since I was a kid. I've been writing songs since I was 11, 12 years old. So I knew that was supposed to be like my true intention. And so Joe and I were recording stuff. And it was all very experimental. I think it was very ahead of its time too. And a lot of the stuff he just was not happy with. He was just like, that's not going to cut it. We could do better than that. And so I would go home just feeling so defeated and disappointed because I wanted so badly to work towards a full recording, a full album. And finally, I mean, this was 99 we started working. I think finally we completed an album after, I think, close to 100 songs. I mean, we can, he and I can go back and forth on that debate because he had a few hard drives crash. With Allison, I know, I don't know if you remember that crazy flood, Allison.
Back in yes, the...
Yes. So...
Ironically, the best sleep I ever had was the night that Allison rained down on Houston, probably flooding the whole town, and people were stuck in, I distinctly remember a lot of people were stuck in different places. A lot of people were stuck in Fitzgerald's, they couldn't go anywhere.
Yes.
But I literally slept like a baby that night for some reason. I just,
wow.
Yeah, I got back problems. And like I've learned that when really heavy, almost near disaster shows up, I get a lot more comfortable. It's weird. It's not what it is. It's just like tornadoes, whatever. Just like I feel very, yeah, I've talked about it with some people, but just like, but that's a whole other thing. But yeah, I remember Allison, and so he got hard drives crashed from that whole thing.
Oh yeah, like we lost part of Rebel Base, which is what we called it back then. You know, he had a lot of records, like shelves of records, and the first shelf or two of all of his shelves were, you know, wet from the flood. You know, they were destroyed. So we have a debate about how many songs we've worked on. But finally in 2006, we produced A Nice Style, which was the first album to come from, the first full-length album from one artist to come from Starlight Beats and Breaks record label, which was the Rebel Crew record label. So that was my album, Nice Style, and I'm really proud of it. Not bad for a breakout album, and I think it did everything an album should do. So it was a great effort.
Yeah, I remember them being very supportive, the Rebel Crew being very supportive, because you remember I was there that week.
Yeah.
In 2007 when y'all doing the show at the, forget where it was. I think it was at Red Cat, Red Cat Jazz Cafe, where you did the performance for the Houston Press Showcase, and the whole crew was there, and Soul Free was there, taking pictures while sitting on my lap for some reason. I don't know what that was all about.
Ooh, Soul Free. I'll have to remind her of that.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out what that meant. But
she was just showing you a little love, you know. Don't, when a lady shows you love, you take it.
Yeah, well, it's so rare for me, so I just.
Aww. Craig needs love too.
Yes, needs love. Stop doing what y'all. Stop flaking out on me, ladies. But but you know, and just trying to see at what point in your life that, you know, because. Yeah, you have a very soulful register with your voice and everything, and just trying to see, how did you discover that you had this?
Oh, man. I want to say, you know, I always loved music, and I came up, like, listening to everything, like we discussed earlier. And a lot of those 80s albums, like, just really stick out. Exposé and Cover Girls and Sade and, you know, just like all the fun girl stuff. But I want to say, like, when I was 11 or 12, like when I started writing, I was just like, I feel every emotion when I sing, you know, and I love singing so much that I knew that was for me. And I picked soul music because early 90s, like when I was growing up, it was all about R&B. It was all about, like, En Vogue, Jodeci, Boyz II Men, you know, it was just like Mary J. Blige, like stuff like that. And I was just like, I loved it. I loved the R&B, you know, and it's funny because sometimes people listen to some of my soulful stuff because, you know, I got pretty much like a wide variety of stuff, and people will be like, this reminds me of, like, you know, early mid-90s stuff. And I'm like, well, I wasn't shooting for that, but, you know, I do love that so much that I think it does reflect in what I do.
And, yeah, so the scene how just was working on to – it's funny you mentioned that you had the wide array of stuff, because I was listening to your second album, Nostalgia.
Yes. Because
the first album didn't – this style. I mean, that was kind of you said Latin hip-hop album. It was just like it was more like a dance album, just like various styles of dance, especially Latin dance and – I mean, especially since of Joby and all them, it was more tuned to soulful, like with house music and just different styles of dance. And Nostalgia was more of a wide out affair,
right?
In terms of genre, because like you would have the dance stuff, we have the lounge stuff, you have more like a soul pop thing with a lot of songs. I mean, just because I was trying to see if that was. What was wanted the second album to be more about, and just how did you go about with working on the second album?
Well, you know, you're on top of it today. You're asking all the right questions. when it came down to the second album, I was going on 4 to 5 years signed to Starlight Beats and Breaks and no follow up album. So I was getting really restless. I had been performing all over town. I had my band. We were doing it. We were just all over the place, all over Texas. And, I was restless. I wanted my follow-up album. I could not pin down Joe B to, I mean, I had a hard enough time pinning him down for my first album. So I figured, you know, if he wasn't gonna come forward on the second album, then I was just gonna have to, kind of, you know, pull away and do my thing, you know. And
what made him so difficult to pin down, basically?
Joe is he's such an artist, and he's always in his work mode, but he kind of has a different flow of inspiration. So he'll work on something and then he'll get restless and he'll work on something else. And then, you know, maybe he'll come back to what he was working on and maybe he won't. And so, you know, there's times where it's just very hard to get him to stick to one thing. You know, I think he has so many avenues of just his artistry and his craft. I mean, he loves to paint. He loves to do poetry. He loves to produce several different artists. He loves to produce his own stuff. He's just all over the place. And he travels, you know, with Havoc Koro B-Boys all over the world as a DJ. So, you know, he's busy. And so I was having a really hard time getting him to commit to my follow-up album. And at one point I just said, you know, Four or five years is just unrealistic for me to be sitting on one album's worth of material, and I have other stuff that's ready to come out. So I branched off, started my own label, Love Records, an acronym LOVE, Living on Various Elements. And you know, I just said, I'm doing my thing, and I worked with different producers on the scene, like people that I had always appreciated and wanted to work with, like Ned Flanders, also known as the Grinch from Late Night Snacks, and E Classic from
Wait, Akani refers to himself
as Ned Flanders. That's his producer name.
I did not know this.
Yeah. He's one of Houston's. Well, he now lives in Denver, but he's one of Houston's best kept gems on production. Like he's kind of a Jay Dilla in his own right. Like he's got it down. The boom bap is definitely his shit, and he's a bad mofo. It's funny. I'll have to tell you one day how I tracked him down, because I was like, I fell in love with his stuff. Somehow, some way, I gained access to a CD or something of his, and I was looking for him because he was so underground.
Yeah, well,
so underground.
Yeah, I mean the same thing. I mean it's usually how it works with him. Just like you find, because he used to have that radio. You mentioned Late Night Snacks that you used to have, and they had a year end best of 2005, and they assembled some tracks to play and put and had like and it was him and a couple other DJs and they had all these CDs of these albums and everything. And I kind of stole one. And but it was good. It was good. I took one and without them noticing, and I listened to it for like I was there for a couple of months. And I listened to it the whole time. It was like a great collection and stuff. That's how I found out about so many people like Rhymefest and Lupe Fiasco and
just, oh yeah.
First want to play that. Yeah, he's a great DJ, great producer, and since his girlfriend is drop dead gorgeous, I'm like, you son of a bitch.
He's very deserving. He's a good guy, and he put in work on the scene. You know, he put in work, and so like I said, I wanted to work with different producers. I worked with Jay Hot, who was also an original Rebel Crew member, known as Rebel John C. So I worked with him, and he's also in his own right, like one of the best producers in Houston. He's had everybody from Slim Thug to Lil Wayne to Exhibit be in his studio. He has like over 6,000 recording hours, like just something ridiculous like that. So I worked with, and then the band also came together, collaborated on a few songs we recorded at Sunrise Studios. So it was like, it was such a great effort. I was so proud of Nostalgia. But I was very green on promoting it. And I didn't do bad, I still have friends that hit me up and they're like, hey, I just heard you on iTunes Radio, or I just heard you on Spotify, or, whatever. And so it's cool. I mean, sometimes it just takes a long time for the music to get out. But it's a pretty decent effort. I'd like to think that with every album, I'm getting better, and I'm getting more broader of an audience.
Yeah. Cause I gotta be honest with you. Cause I was wondering about, because when I was looking for stuff to like on Spotify to listen to, so I can talk to you about, so I had a second album. Like, holy shit, when did this happen? Like, you have a whole other album that I didn't know about, and just like, and it had me wonder, like, when did you record it? It came out in 2010, so
right.
I mean, where did you record it?
Just different places. People really slept on Nostalgia, and a lot of it is my fault because, there was so much of a buildup for Nostalgia, and it was such a successful CD release party. I had like over 500 people at the release party at Engine Room. So yeah. It was big. It was bad. It was awesome, and we sold a lot of merch and stuff, but it didn't have the same impact that Nice Style had. And so, I pretty much pulled those songs together, that year, like 2009, 2010. And I pulled that album together and I think, it's a solid effort. Some people liked Nice Style better. Some people love Nostalgia. Some people are looking forward to what else I drop. It definitely got a little slept on. I did get the coverage from Houston Press and Houston Chronicle. I always appreciate the hometown love. But I didn't get like the national coverage that say Nice Style got and all that. And a lot of it was also that, I left Houston. I moved to LA. So, some people were not very accepting of that and they weren't very supportive of that. And some people were like, go for it. You've done what you can here and we love you and support you wherever you go. So that's how it went.
When did you move?
I left March of 2011.
March of 2011, and so, but, well, I mean, that's the thing I've kind of noticed about in all my years in covering the Houston music scene is that it can be a very obstacle-filled experience, trying to get your stuff out there. I mean, sometimes, it's one of those great conundrums, if you will, that is something I still hear about when I listen to, Houston radio, when I listen to KPFT and certain shows on there, And they still complain about how the Houston music scene is necessarily as supportive as other scenes. They can't have their, they can't get the stuff together. There's always trouble with problems with promoters and just people trying to get their music out there. And just, and I'm trying to, I don't know exactly what made nostalgia and different experience for a different experience as it was with Night Style. Maybe it's because you had backing from the Rebel Crew. With the first album. I mean the Rebel Crew, I believe the Rebel Crew logo is on the cover with you on Night Style. And seemed like nostalgia seemed to be a much more independent production.
Yes.
And so it's just like, and it gets kind of a situation of live and learn and everything. But it's, I mean, just trying to get your take on the Houston music scene. I mean, you seem to be a lot less bitter about it than other people.
You know, because I always try, and I'm still learning this quality, is just like, after it's all said and done, remember the good. You know, don't be bitter about it, because if you're bitter about it, you are not allowing yourself to experience what's to come. And I don't want to be that kind of person or that kind of artist that, you know, hits that point and peaks. You know, I want to like keep, you know, a slow, steady climb. So, you know, I love Houston. I love Houston. Without Houston support, I wouldn't have gotten here or still get here. I mean, Houston supported this last single I just released on April 19th, Rumors. So, you know, again, I still have, you know, some pretty solid people in Houston that back me up and love me, and family and friends and everything. But I did feel like I maxed out in Houston. We are just not quite there as a music town, a music industry. I'll go as far as saying, and I know you'll probably agree, that Austin's more advanced than we are. I mean, just with the music festivals alone. But I don't see myself in Austin, you know. It's just like, as much as I love Texas and Houston, I'll never, ever, ever stop loving Houston. I may go back. I don't know what's going to happen. But I needed a bigger hub. I needed to extend my wings and fly and just see what was out there. And you know, it's hard being a big fish in a small pond, so I needed to be a little tadpole again. And humble myself, you know, with the competition that's around. And I'm definitely able to do all that here. I feel challenged, you know, whereas in Houston, I just didn't feel very challenged anymore. And Houston is so, I think the term would be like almost sometimey, you know, like sometimes they'll have your back and they'll support you, and sometimes they're just over it, because if you are showing your face and performing regularly, then they're bored, you know. They want you to do stuff not so regularly so they can, you know, come out. And And it's just that way, and that's okay, you know. That's absolutely okay. That's where I'm from. I love it there, and I'm so grateful for the support, and I won't be bitter about it. But I definitely needed something more.
Well, you moved to L.A. in March of 2011, and, I mean, has this kind of been the full-time gig for you performing? Because I believe when you were living in Houston and working as a singer and vocalist, you also were working at an investment bank.
Yes, I worked for Goldman Sachs, and I know. You know what's funny? Goldman Sachs made the news. And I was just like, I knew something was going on. I remember seeing that vice president guy walk in, and I remember seeing, you know, it was just like, I was there when all this shit was going down, and it was like right under my nose.
Hey, how long you worked down there?
I worked for Goldman, 3 years. And then I worked for in the same exact building, Stewart & Stevenson, which is an oil and gas power products manufacturing company. Because, you know, our lovely Houston is always going to be industrial, oil and gas industry related. So, it was definitely an experience. And to answer your question with my long, drawn-out response, I work for a commercial real estate company in L.A. because – as you know, LA is more expensive than Houston, and your girl is not going to have step on, you know, the lifestyle that I'm used to having. So I enjoy it, though. It's very flexible. They support what I do, and it pays the bills, and it funds my dreams. So I am in no way mad. I am a very good organizer. I'm a very good admin. And as I said, you know, they're just like, hey, you have a show, go do it. You have a video shoot, go do it. You know, just let us know in advance so we could plan for it and know where you're at. And, you know, sometimes I'll be at my video shoot and they're still calling me because I'm their assistant. So they're just like, Karina, where am I supposed to be? What am I doing today? And I'm just like, okay, we discussed this, but okay, sure. You know, oh, are you at your video shoot? I'm like, that's funny that you can remember what I'm doing more than what you're supposed to be doing. And so they're like, okay, well, oh, do I have that meeting today? And I'm like, yeah, it's exactly where you're supposed to be in 20 minutes. So get in your car. So yeah, it's funny. It's cool. I'm in downtown LA. I love the downtown energy. You know, downtown is just where it's at in every city. So I like the downtown LA. Downtown LA is not as clean as downtown Houston. There's definitely more bums and they pop up and ask you for money and, you know, food.
Oh, so is Houston, but distinctly. So is anywhere. Just like just people, especially in a downtown area. Just.
Totally. But you know what, Craig? Houston's cleaned up a lot. Like they kind of pushed all of the, they pushed all of the homeless people like back towards the Star of Hope. So it's not like they're so much in your face like they are here. Like the people from Skid Row, which is the homeless community in LA, they migrate towards the corporate side so they can try to, you know, swindle. So it is a little different. But you're also surrounded by so much beauty. Like I love the surroundings here. I love having the beach 20 minutes away, having the mountains like 5 minutes away, you know, I mean, there's so much to do. It's crazy. So I definitely will not claim any other place but Houston as far as like where I'm from, but I do like where I'm at, you know, LA is a super cool place.
Hey, I'm sure. Have you been to places like, I don't know, the Temple Bar or, like any certain spots that you know, bad night gal like you would have frequent. Yep. Yeah.
Oh, there you are. There you are. I was just about to type you that you froze on me. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you kind of froze over there, but we cleared that up somewhat. But just in the places like you know, over there in LA that you frequent that you enjoy.
The beach, dude. I love the freaking beach. Like, I'm at the beach as often as I can, which is not often enough. But, you know, I've made the beach my little sanctuary, to go and write, to go and lay out and get sun and just to go and soak it in. You know, I can't live there. I don't know. Something about, I mean, I probably could, but because I love downtown so much and my job's centrally located in downtown, I live by.
Ah, damn, you froze up again. Why don't we try to get the call back and shit. Hate that. Yeah, it's back again.
Yeah. Okay, so I was just saying I love the beach. I love Hermosa Beach, Manhattan Beach. Like, those are my two favorites. But I'll go to Santa Monica Beach, Venice Beach, all of them, and Malibu, whatever. I love the beach, and I love hiking. There's so many really cool hiking trails, like, you know.
Can I just stop them real quick? You know, the lonely perv in me wants to ask you, just, and what do you wear on these beach excursions? Just trying to compress it, to suppress it, or whatever the hell you call it, but it's just like.
A two-piece, of course. I mean, you have
Are there pictures? Facebook? I mean, nothing. Ah, never mind.
You should be my Instagram buddy.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm on Instagram too.
Karina Nistal, baby. Just, you know, check me out, add me, whatever. I'll follow you back and see what's up with you. But yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's all about the two-piece and getting your sun in all the spots you need.
Yeah, you your face is very tanned out, I'd just say, very, very, very sunny and shit like that. But I was actually asking, like, is there, you frequent any night spots like you used to do back in your younger days?
Yeah. Hey, are you calling me older?
aren't you? Just say, but you're not older than me. I know that.
For sure.
I remember you being a lot younger than me, and therefore, you know, I say, damn, she's accomplished so much, and she's so young. Damn.
You're too kind. You know, like, there's a little lounge called Sayers, which is really cool. Friday nights, my friend's horn group called Regiment Horns, they're actually on tour with Justin Timberlake. If you see his horn players, those are my friends.
Oh, damn. Yeah,
so he does a Friday night when he's not on tour with Justin at Sayers Lounge, which is behind a, get this, hot dog stand. So you have to go through the hot dog stand to get into this place, and you have to know somebody in this place or you're not going to get in. That's one of my spots. I like open mics, like the Federal. What else? There's a lot of places are very cool during the week. Like The Room has a really cool, like, hip hop funk breaks night on Wednesdays. The Room in Hollywood. I like, The Airliner is a cool underground hip hop spot. It's kind of like Grab Bar a little bit. Karma Lounge, which is, kind of like Beverly Melrose area or Koreatown area, I should say. They also have a cool hip hop lounge there, like hip hop DJs. Where else? I like to go on Fusicology.com. Yeah, and just explore. Yeah. I've found some really cool spots there. There was a when was it? February, DJ Jazzy Jeff put on a hell of a show. Jill Scott came. Victor Duplay was DJing side by side with him. Who else was there? Razkaz, Mad Skills was hosting. So it was like there were so many celebrities in there, and I was just like loving it. So, you know, there are times you'll catch really cool stuff going on. I live in Highland Park, which is 6 miles north of downtown next to Eagle Rock, which is really popular. They have a huge music festival called Eagle Rock Music Festival, around the fall. And, they usually have really awesome acts and it's free. They have Flying Lotus. They have Farside. I mean, just so many really cool acts. And like I said, it's free. So and it's just the neighborhood next to mine. So I usually go there. But yeah, I mean, just there's a lot going on. I don't get out as much as I should. I should definitely get out and network more. But this is a city where it really is all about who you know.
Yeah.
And that's just it.
Yeah, I interviewed the lady who runs Fusicology, Asia Shine, on this.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I managed to get a moment of her time. She was, like, multitasking so many things, micromanaging. She was, like, she was on her smartphone and on her laptop, and I managed to get at least a good 56 minutes out of her before she had to go.
That's awesome. Yeah, she's got something really cool going there.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that site because I find a lot of stuff to do there because I don't just want to go out and explore. And, you know, that's when you run into, like, some crazy hipster night that you're not really into. So
I'm hipster night. What's the worst? What's traffic's worst, the traffic in Houston or the traffic in Los Angeles?
Dare you ask, Craig Lindsay? LA, of course. It's horrible. Like I said, I work six miles away from where I live. So, 6 miles, that's it. It takes me 30 minutes. 30 minutes to and 30 minutes from. So either way, it's like I'm sitting there in traffic, hardcore, like barely inching up, you know, to get home. And that sucks. So yeah, LA traffic is definitely worse. Houston, it's just longer distances.
Mm-hmm.
that make it worse, because I also did my share of commuting from, you know, suburbia to downtown Houston. But yeah, it's crazy out here. It is insane. It's important to learn the back roads. And even then, you will be facing some traffic. So, yeah, it's definitely worse here. It sucks. It really doesn't. And people here just will cut you off like you weren't even there. You know, I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. But, you know, you manage. I mean, it's only 6 miles, so it's not like it's, you know, 50 miles or something. But it does get hard. You definitely want to work around where you live. And you don't want to go very far unless it's like off peak traffic time.
Yeah. Well, you know, how's things been on the dating front? I mean, it's so bold to ask that.
You are very bold to ask that. You know, I don't date. I just don't do it. This is a huge dating town.
Uh-huh.
I went through a 5-year relationship and had that breakup about almost a year and a half ago. So I'm coasting right now, and I'm focused on myself and doing my thing. Like I said, this is a huge dating town. Like, people are just like hungry for their next victim. And, it's really crazy out here. Like you can have someone like that if you want, you know, I mean, people just hook up and stuff all the time, but that's just not my, that's not my focus right now. Like, I told myself after my relationship that I devoted so much to making the relationship work that I wanted to take some time to really work on myself and really regroup and really focus on some strong material.
What happened with the last relationship? Because it seemed it was going on for so long. I mean, how did it come from just being this 5 years of 5.5 years or something, and then just ending?
You know, just we had differences on our long-term goals, and you know, he was very he was scared of commitment, terrified of it, really? Which was crazy because you're already 5 years in.
Yeah.
But I really didn't think there was much of a future anymore. And we had like one really, really bad breakup, and I could not for the life of me get over it. It was so bad, that I just, you know, I tried to give it another chance, and I realized in my heart of hearts that I was not living to my fullest potential and that I was not happy. As much as I loved that person, I was not happy. So I broke up with him, and it was very hard. I mean, you know, it was very, 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 very hard decision to make. Probably one of the hardest decisions I've ever had to make. But I wanted to be happy, and I just felt like sometimes you have to trust God, and God has better things in store for you. You just have to see it for yourself. And if you are stagnant and you don't see that for yourself, it's not going to happen. So I convinced myself that, you know, I needed to move forward.
And move forward you have, and I'm pretty, like you said, you're like, they're pretty sure there are guys looking for their next victim, so they're rolling up on you like, hey, hey, I have a SAG card, you know, I want to do some date player work or something like that, or just like, and I'm pretty sure you're getting guys like that all the time roll up on you, am I correct?
You know, I think that I'm so focused. You know, I was telling a guy friend of mine earlier that I was talking to on the phone, because I have so many friends call and check on me, you know, because they're like, I'm worried about you. How are you doing out there? I was telling him, you know, I'm probably in the best shape that I've probably ever been in, because I work out a lot. I just have a lot of time to invest in myself right now, and I'm focused on myself, like I said. And like, I really don't get approached nearly as much as I probably could. And that's simply because I have my game face on, I have my guard up, and I don't want to just get approached by anyone. You know, I want to attract the right attention. And, you know, I'm pretty no-nonsense about it nowadays. I'm just like, you know, if you're not going to step with the right intentions, then just don't waste my time. I don't want to waste your time. Don't waste my time.
What are you looking for in a dude? Because I find that to be a question that annoys a lot of women since they don't know their damn selves. But I'm pretty sure you have an idea of what you're looking for.
I don't want to say a lot of things, but I have to start with just chemistry. Like, we have to have a connection, you know. I have to be attracted to you as much as you're attracted to me. And, you know, you have to be able to support my dreams the way I intend to support yours. Loyalty is a big one. You know, it's with our fast pace, world that we live in, it's so easy to get online and find your next victim. And it's like, you know, if I am going to be with a guy that's going to end up cheating on me, I'd just rather be by myself. You know, I'd rather wait for the next boat or, you know, the next opportunity or person to come along. But, you know, those are three major ones. Also, just someone who's willing to take that step and make that sacrifice. I mean, at this point in the game, everybody has some kind of baggage. I realize that. So, you know, if you've had, you know, previous obligations or engagements, that's fine. But, you know, I can't handle the, like, I'm still married, but we're separated type thing. Like, no, figure that out, sort yourself out, and then we can talk, you know. But I don't want to be in limbo. I don't want to be, like, all the way down your priority list. You know, I want it to be fair and square. I know what I can give, and I know how I value myself. So I can't settle for less than I'm willing to give.
All right. And it kind of makes me now think about the track you've been talking about, Rumors, which is a lovely video, by the way. Love seeing you on the swing.
Thank you.
And it kind of makes me think, like, a lot, you know, that came out, that song came out this year, and it, I believe it details coming out of a relationship that just wasn't working out and everything.
Right.
I mean, I'm guessing a lot, you know, a lot of what you've been talking about, a lot of what you've been through kind of led to you composing that song and whatnot.
Absolutely. I think when writing material, it's best to write it from, you know, your experiences, your point of view. I mean, I have a pretty vivid imagination. I could definitely write based on what I see other people going through or hear other people going through. But I do put a lot of myself in my music. And I was going through a very difficult time. I was in a lot of pain. And I have probably three albums worth of material like Rumors. It's crazy. And I'll tell you how that came about. Before our first major breakup, my ex and I was listening to Sade, and I was thinking, God, she's so amazing. She's a goddess. I love her work. I always have. She's one of my biggest, like, influences. And I thought, I wonder if I could write material like that. Well, I tell you, you know, be careful for what you wish for, because, you know, it can happen. And it was a very, very painful time to come up with that kind of material. And it still kind of is. I mean, I can still tap into that energy and that, you know, that sadness in my life that I once went through, and I can still write from that point. Like, it's so deep, it's so deep in my heart, like, you know, deeply imprinted in my heart, that I can definitely tap in and still write songs like that. But I'm trying to move forward to more upbeat stuff, but I definitely have it. Have it. So it was a growing period, and I'm glad, you know, I mean, I'm grateful again for everything, you know, because you're not always going to be happy. It's unrealistic. You know, you're not always going to write positive material. Sometimes it's going to hurt, and you should always come in your true form and be who you are and express what you feel, because that's who you are.
Well, I mean, what stuff are you working on now?
I'm working towards my next album, Courageous, with a K. And
why K? Oh, because Karina. Okay, right.
Yeah, you know how I like to personify everything, but there's also like the rage in Courageous is also going to be in caps, because I've gone through a lot of emotional I've gone through a lot of emotional stuff, and a lot of it's made me angry, and then I've had to like balance myself and be zen again, and you know, trust in God's timing and whatnot. I have written so much while living in LA, because this is such a difficult market to break into. And it's so cliquish, and it's so like they play favorites, and there's so much politics that I've had to take this time to use any kind of outlet I can as an artist. And so I've been writing as much as possible, and I'm probably through 3 of the writing books that were given to me when I left Houston. I just started the 4th one like 2 weeks ago. So I'm writing a lot. I'm so inspired out here. It's insane. And so, you know, at any given moment I could pull out those songs, or I can tailor a song from scratch and make it work. And now, because I have been recording quite a bit, so between writing and recording, I'm doing a lot. I still perform, you know, quite a bit, but not as regularly as I did in Houston. I'm writing and recording a lot, and just taking advantage of my resources and what I can do. People are asking me for acapellas just all over the world. Like, they're just like, hey, remember me? You know, I played your song, blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, hey, I got so-and-so, and they're looking for a singer, you know. And so I'm getting requests for vocals. And that's awesome. So I may not be, you know, because I consider myself to be a pretty decent showman. You know, I love to perform. I love to captivate my audience. But again, you know, I'm going to exercise whatever outlet I can at any moment I can. And right now it does seem to be writing and recording that I'm doing the most of.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for you to, you know, to do that collaboration with King Britt and just set the world ablaze.
Oh, sweetie, from your mouth to God's ears. I love King Britt. Before I left, I left in March, so February before I left, he came to Houston, and Jessica Lozano and I opened up for him. Like, I hosted the whole night, and she opened up for him. And so, you know, I got to talk to him and, you know, hang out with him. And he's such a cool guy. I would love to work with him. He's him and Mark Farina. You know, could you imagine a Farina and Karina?
Yeah, that could work. I can see that happening, and
so I'll make you a shout out when that happens. I'll be like, Craig Lindsay, what's up, fool? What's up, my motherfucker?
That'd be nice, and thank you for thinking of me when that happens. Usually at this time where I ask the guest, just let everybody know where they can find you online, if you're on Twitter, if you got a website, if you're on Pinterest.
I do Yelp. my Yelp account has gotten me in trouble. Anyway, I'm KarinaNistal.com, KarinaNistal, for those that, you know, wouldn't know how to spell it, and I'm not offended, but I'm not Katrina and I'm not Christina. Christina's my mom. I'm Karina. So, KarinaNistal.com, it's the same on everything. Facebook, I'm Karina Nistal. Fan me at Karina Nistal Music. That would be really cool. And I'm on Twitter, Karina Nistal. I'm on Instagram, Karina Nistal. I'm on Sonic Bids, Karina Nistal.
Got a Bandcamp page.
Yeah, Everett Bandcamp. I mean, you know, just search me. I'm there. Actually, my Sonic Bids, which is my EPK, which what I read this morning, their EPKs are going out of style. I'm Karina Nistal Music. I'm also on Reverb Nation, Karina Nistal. So just, you know, find me anywhere. You can pretty much Google me and I'm in the mix. And, you know, I'm pretty approachable. As long as you approach me the right way. So, you know, no indecent proposals, please. But, yeah, I'm always open and willing to collaborate with people. If we gel and have a good work chemistry, I'm super down. And super grateful to you, Mr. Lindsay.
Oh, thank you. Just appreciate that. And so, and... I really don't know how to handle it when people keep on, you know, just, you know, the compliments and everything like that. I try to
you
take
just say thank you. You need to learn how to say thank you.
I say, okay, thank you. I'm working on myself. That's all I say.
Hey, we all are. We are whips. We're works in progress. So don't feel bad about it.
Okay, I'll try not to. Well, was this good for you as it was for somebody?
It absolutely is and was and will continue to be.
Alright, well, thank you very much, dear, for taking part in this. It was great seeing you again. It was great
seeing you.
Lovely, lovely face and those earrings and just all about you. And I'm gonna go on your Instagram page and look for lewd photos.
And, thank you, Craig.
And let me close this out here. This is Craig D. Lindsay is always saying, you know what, I would tell you about I haven't had a good time since 1997, but I have to go get salad dressing. So.